Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Kate Loving-Schenk, and Joan Adams and I host this show. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. Our guest this evening is Sheila Odette, otherwise known as Astrology's Astrologer. Sheila will share with us the astrological chart of Whitey Adams, one of those men who stands out in your experience after meeting him. He is a real lover of life and a lover of all things. Sheila plans to also do the astrological chart of the Blue Heron Farm Spiritual Retreat Center, whose grand opening is 8/13 through the 15th, 2010. Joining me now is Joan Adams. Hello, dear Joan. Oh, hello, dear Sheila.
How? Is dear Joan there?
Hello, dear Joan. And dear Sheila. Well, here we all are, so that's
dear
cool.
Joan better be there.
I am right here and just loving it. I just can't wait. And
okay.
The family is off playing family golf. It's family golf tournament night. So.
Oh, my gosh. Do you play golf?
Not me. But
you don't play golf. The whole family plays.
They all play but me, yeah. And they're all up there, all dressed in red shirts and
oh, wow.
And already sending pictures back. So, yeah, they're having a big time. So we'll have to listen again on the archives.
Okay. Go. What do you want to say, Kate?
I'm just, I might even listen again to this one because Whitey is certainly very cool. And Tom is going to listen about, he's very interested in the chart of the Blue Heron Farm Retreat.
Oh, I am too.
So.
I'm anxious to
see
it. But yeah, that's going to be fun.
But do Whitey first because he's such a joy.
Okay. Whitey is very interesting because Whitey is really, when I look at certain charts, I go by if the sun, how tight or how far apart the sun and the moon are in a chart. And for me, the sun in a chart is like the vortex energy. It's like the seed energy. We all have the circle of life, and then the seed in the middle is the vortex energy, which is the seed of all we are and all we put into it and all the good and wonderful things that we have inside of it. It's really why when we go back or wherever we come from, I don't think there's any judgment because we come from pure love. And in this lifetime, we build up contrast. And in that contrast, we send all kinds of vibrations into that vortex of who we really are. And by that, in that way, we're in a school where we learn things. So when you look at a chart like this, which is, first of all, he has Capricorn. He was born in December the 24th, for the people that are listening, which was a Saturday. He has his sun, which is his God seed, at 1 degree of Capricorn 54. And it's in the house of creating your own experience. So it means he really didn't have to come. He really decided that he would, this is like a volunteer lifetime. And in many ways, to make people happy and to help them in different kinds of walks of life. And Capricorn, especially the Capricorn, the way it is in this chart, can bring experiences from a last lifetime because Capricorn rules ancient mind. It rules ancient times. It rules ancient mind. And Capricorns are extremely, extremely creative because they can build something out of nothing. They really can do that. And they usually have many talents, like Jim Glass, Joanne's husband, Reverend Glass. He was a minister, but he also did You know, he made bowls and he sang and he could perform, and just Capricorns just have a multitude of talent. And Lucille Ball was a Capricorn, and Elvis Presley was a Capricorn. I mean, both of them are really high in the field of art. The thing that happens with this chart is it's in the second house, and the second house is across from the eighth, and he has Chiron in the eighth, which is the eighth house is you teach people how to treat you. And
wow.
So anyway, this chart is a very interesting chart in making people in many ways feel good, teaching people how to treat other people. And so then you go, okay, where is the moon? Well, the moon is at 0 degrees of Aquarius. Now, the planet that rules both Aquarius and Capricorn is Saturn. And Saturn is, you know, responsibility. So that's why I say that he didn't come in kindergarten. He didn't come in first grade. He didn't come in even in college. He came in as a master class. And so in this master class, it means basically that the what he's setting up around him, the moon is what you set up around you in order to reflect yourself and what you want to teach, is Aquarius, which means it's all kinds of things that are outside of the box, things that are not in the box. The Capricorn may look like they're in the box, but they're not in the box. They're the one, you know, when you think about, there's a thing I do with 9 dots, and you have to put them together. I don't know if your listeners have ever done it. You have to put together 9 dots. It's a square with like 4 straight lines. And a lot of people can't do it. But if I'm working with somebody who's a psychologist or something, they'll come in and they say, "Oh, we know this. We do this." The point is. Not that you can connect the 9 lines with the 4 straight line without lifting the pen from the paper. It's where you start. And that's what I want to do a metaphor for this chart. In other words, people that are really know this structure, they start outside the box with a line way outside the box. And then they draw it down across the box and up the side and then across again and down. So it looks like an arrow. It looks like a Sagittarius arrow. But the point is, of the whole exercise, is to think outside the box. And that's what this chart it really is. Now, I found an interesting thing in doing some research on this chart. He was born with Venus in Scorpio and an ascendant in Scorpio. Venus is how we love people. Venus is how we share love. So Venetian energy is when a child says, oh, this is my toy. This is my mother. This is mine, 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 mine. That's Venus when you're small. And then Venus, when you get larger, a lot of times Neptune starts to come into play, which Neptune is like that expands the love into compassion and forgiveness and radical forgiveness if you let it expand. Venus in Scorpio is deep love. When you look at Venus in Scorpio, you know that there's staying power. And you also know when you look at Venus in Scorpio that when everybody else walks away, that person won't be there. Everybody, huh?
Absolutely.
Everybody walks away. Like, we have a friend going through a really big kind of thing in Philadelphia. And what has happened there is she said, you certainly find out quickly who your friends are.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody, we've all had that experience. But a Venus in Scorpio, I remember when I was going through a very hard time closing my institute, I remember this doctor who's a surgeon in town and somebody else, they showed up to help clean his studio. And I was like shocked, you know. It was just like, oh, my gosh. And they said, you know, you've done so much for our kids and we just want to come here and help you with this. But it's people that you never expect to show up. That's what Venus in Scorpio is. And when you're in the deepest, darkest place, they're there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next thing in this house is Mercury in Sagittarius. but he was born with Mercury in Sagittarius retrograde, which means when Mercury is how I'm speaking here to you. It's auditory. It's very verbal. It's how I connect with people. That's what Mercury is. It's how you tell the story. That's what Mercury is. And he has Mercury in Sagittarius retrograde. So you go, okay, when did that go direct? And that means it could have gone direct when he was 5 years old. It could have gone direct when he was 30 years old. If it would have been that Mercury was retrograde all that time and it's in the first house, it would mean that he was almost living in the last time and this lifetime, in the last lifetime and this lifetime. I find when you find, this is what I call a gate chart. There are certain gates in life that you go through. They are tests. Mm-hmm. They are tests of things that you never think you can do. And then all of a sudden you do them. You do them in sometimes in process work. But process work, even if you're working in process, it means you're really doing it as artificially what you do in real life. When you have a Mercury in Sagittarius that in the first year of life it went direct, it's called a gate chart. It means that basically, and it's in the first house, it means that basically he came into this lifetime through this gate. One time we did a process for 14 days out in the wilderness, and you had to find gates. You know, we call them gates and trails, and each one of the gates you found was a new experience. So when you have Mercury in Sagittarius and a gate, it means you're coming here for a lot of experiences. For a lot of experiences and to work with a lot of different people. So I imagine when I'm looking at this chart, he really is available to talk to anybody about anything. And he can get into, with Mercury and Sag like this, he can get into rapport right away.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, if they're talking visually, like I see this and I see that, he can match rapport. Or if they're talking auditorily, like I hear what you're saying, or that kind of thing, or if there's a feeling way of talking, the kinesthetic feeling in neurolinguistic terms, it seems like this chart can do all of that. They can get into rapport with mostly anybody about anything.
Right.
And so at 20 years old, Mercury... Very quick, Mercury came right on top of the sun in Capricorn. So it would be interesting to know what happened at 20 because he has these things that happen at 20, and then there's Mercury goes into Aquarius at 40, which means unlike a lot of other charts, it lines up with the sun at 30, but then it lines up with the moon at 40. So it means there's a great deal of stuff that goes on, and in between that, I found the midpoint of the sun and moon. The midpoint of the sun and the moon is how you process and negotiate your environment. Now, I look directly across the chart, and I see that his gestation point is 15 degrees of Cancer. So when his midpoint between the two of them is the sun and moon midpoint. So he had help from the other side. There are a lot of guardian angels here that are working when he gets into a particular hard kind of process or position or something that is working directly down at the midpoint between his sun and moon. Mm-hmm. Also, the moon at zero, both the sun at 1 degree of Capricorn 54 and the moon at 0 degree of Capricorn means they're both in the beginning of their signs. So, which means they're in the first decadent of the sign, which means they are basically, it takes, by Uranian astrology, it takes 30 years for them to get through the sign. And his son, it took him 28 years to change signs. But then when his son changed signs, it went right on top of the moon, which I find really fascinating. And that happened at 28 years old when the sun came to the moon, and that was his beginning of his Saturn return. And also at 29 years old, Uranus goes direct. So an awful lot of stuff, Joan, here happened between 28 and 30. And
all right,
that is
let me Okay, I'm doing math just as fast as I can go.
But well, you have 20, this on tape. You don't have to do math, Joe.
I know, but at 20 is the height of his baseball career.
Yeah.
Where he was playing professional ball.
Yeah.
Now, 28 is about when we got married, right
uh-huh.
in there.
Well, the sun came to the moon. Hey, hey.
Ooh,
and
beautiful.
You said something else.
I said
lost
40.
Lost his vision.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to figure how old he was. He was close to 50, I guess. 48 to 50.
Mm-hmm. Well, he has Mercury, which, you know, at 40 goes into Aquarius. Now, then Mercury stays in Aquarius, and in the 40s is when he lost his vision. Is that what you're saying to me?
I think so. Yeah, I was trying to do the
which
math.
Which means,
here, but...
yeah, well, you can do the math because you can listen to it afterwards. Because if
I
you're
will.
Doing the math, you're not hearing
yeah,
me.
Late 40s, early 50s.
Yeah. Well, Mercury in Aquarius is seeing with the third eye, the inner eye. When it's Mercury goes into Aquarius, that means, you know, the vision thing is Mercury. It means seeing the world in, you know, internally as well as externally. So you have the vision. It's, you know, it's like Helen Keller, who could describe all kinds of, I mean, she was blind since birth, and she could describe all kinds of places all over the world.
Oh, I know.
So,
story.
Huh?
I love her story. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's great. But then, you know, Helen Keller did have Sullivan, who was the guide, you know, the mentor, the person beside, you know, that walked beside. So, but the Mercury in Aquarius, when you see Mercury in Aquarius and the Moon in Aquarius, of course, it's inner vision. It's the capacity to see what's not there,
mm-hmm.
the capacity to really understand unusual things. And he has not only that, but he has Jupiter in Aquarius. And Jupiter in Aquarius, you know, it's when we're talking about Aquarius, we're talking about vibrational energy. And vibrational energy, some of the times when you have the Moon in Aquarius and Jupiter in Aquarius down in the belly of the chart, it means there is so much vibrational soul energy that's coming into a human structure, sometimes it's hard for it to hold, especially when they're children. I mean, it means, you know, it's like electricity. It's like lightning. It's like bolts of lightning are coming in. So many things in the brain, you know, so many paths are opened up. Sometimes Jupiter and Aquarius, you know, and can speak some all kinds of languages. They hear all kinds of things that other people don't hear. They can hear voices in the room. They're clairvoyant. They have a thing about they can do time forward and backwards. All of those kind of things can happen with that. However, that's not honored in childhood. As soon as someone says, the child says, oh, my gosh, I see Aunt Stella standing in the corner, everybody goes, no, you don't. I mean, you have to be in the right environment for that to be honored. And in the United States of America, not so much. You know, not so much. Until we have Haley Joel Osment seeing dead people. Then it kind of changed. When he did the movie and said, I see dead people, then it was kind of okay to see dead people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he has this kind of, you can jump in here anytime. It's like seeing in a full picture, okay? A lot of creative minds see in full pictures, and we don't teach in school that way. We teach, you know... We separate things. There's a wonderful story. I don't know. Do you know Jean Houston?
No.
I do, yeah.
No. Okay. Well, there's a wonderful story about Jean Houston. And this really is like the Moon in Aquarius and Jupiter in Aquarius and a little bit like this chart is. She was supposed to speak in some place, Toledo or something. And what happened was this woman called her and said, you're supposed to speak at our women's club. And Gene Houston said, no, that's not on the program. That is not there. And the woman said, yes, it is. They forgot to put it on your program, but it's there. And she said, this is the day you're supposed to do it. And Gene Houston said, well, I do have time in there, but it's not on my calendar. So finally, Gene Houston said, okay, I'll do it. So she goes and she starts and she speaks to the woman's club. And then she had time, and the woman said, come to my house for tea. And then Gene Houston begins to think, I'm not here for that woman's club. I'm here for something else. Hark. So she goes to the house, and the woman said, come down to the basement. She goes down to the basement, and there in the basement was this little boy of 7 or 8 who had built all kinds of things, like balls would roll down things, and then they would hit things and jump into other things, and there were all kinds of things, like Legos weren't created yet, but he was building all kinds of things out of all kinds of things. And Gene Houston was just, oh my gosh, this kid is, wow, he must be straight A student. And the woman said, he's flunking. So Gene Houston said, how can that be that he's flunking? And she said, because he cannot answer the questions and do the text the way the teacher, the way the itinerary is set out. So Gene Houston calls up where she was teaching and told her substitute teacher to teach for 2 weeks, and she went to school with this kid. So she got into the classroom, and she said, this is what I do, and she got all the teachers, and she began to explain what a creative mind does. And a creative mind sees in holes. They don't see partially, like this and this and this. They learn in a different kind of way. So Gene Houston, I wish you'd have came to my school for me, but hey. So she then taught these teachers how to handle this boy. And these teachers were smart enough to know they had other kids like this. And they said, it's a great way of teaching. So this gestalt way of seeing things in a different way, and it is, you know, Suzuki method and the whole kind of thing that goes on there. This boy grew up to be a design engineer. But he still got all B's in school, because if he got a test of multiple choice, A, B, C, and D, he would write E in, and he would give a better answer. So they had to mark him down, because they had no way of doing that. So it's that's kind of a metaphoric story, the way Whitey is.
He definitely does his own thing. There's no
doubt about that.
Now, when you're talking about the creativity, one of the things I do around here every, well, this is typical all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
Every quarter, he gathers together all of his high school baseball team.
Right.
Now, think about that. These guys have been friends how many years now?
A lot.
And they all meet and eat hamburgers. But one of the things that I have to do that is my part of it,
mm-hmm.
Whitey writes trivia.
Right.
That is about either baseball trivia, or most of it is just junk stuff about these guys.
Right.
And 90% of it is pure foolishness.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just crazy stuff, but hilarious. I mean, we'll run into people downtown, and they'll say, I got the biggest laugh out of that. I enjoyed that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's that whole creative thing you're talking about.
Well,
oh,
you know,
don't forget, Whitey is the greatest practical joker on the planet.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Humor.
Oh,
You know, I always say people will, you know, people will not remember what you say, people will not remember what you do, but people will always remember how you make them feel.
He mm-hmm. will say, and I'll grumble about the typing, and he'll say, now, you know, we're going to make somebody happy with this.
Yeah, see? You're going to make somebody feel good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He married an April Fool's baby.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he did.
Yes, he married our dear Joan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He has Saturn in Aries in the fifth house, though. And Saturn in Aries is the one difficult point. Saturn is where Saturn is what comes down on us in our wheel. Saturn is what tells you the rules. Saturn is, and Saturn in Aries is sometimes it rules the father, but it rules the one in the household that comes down on you. it rules the teacher that comes down on you. It rules the person that say you have to do it within these perimeters. And so he has Saturn in Aries. And Saturn in Aries sometimes is that you're way ahead of the game and you get pulled back.
Mm-hmm.
You're way ahead of somebody and you're going, well, we could do it. And they're saying, no, we have to do it this and don't fix it if it's not broken. And Saturn in Aries is in the fifth house. So it's in the house of perception. It's in the house of creativity. So it's the thing in his chart that can really sit on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Uranus in Taurus in the sixth house, which is what you're saying about his sense of humor. Uranus is a lightning mind of making people laugh or making people whatever. It just is, and Uranus in Taurus hits to the core. It really gets to a place in somebody that makes them feel good. If you don't want to use it for other stuff, you can. But it sounds like he doesn't. Okay.
No, he just does it with pure tea foolishness. But he should have been a stand-up.
Yes, he should have been.
He could have done stand-up comedy, and you know, of course, in those days,
oh my gosh,
nobody even knew
so
that
good.
Was a possibility. But he
yeah.
could
so
be
good.
A well done stand-up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Stand-up comedy is about the hardest thing. You know, I was watching America Has Talent, and when the comedians come on, and Howie Mandel is now on the panel, and he is going, it is the hardest thing to do, especially in a show like that, because you have 90 seconds. You
right.
can't even do setups. You know, it's the most rejected thing when you think about it, that, you know, on the stage that there is.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be ready for so much rejection in the stand-up comedian thing. I'm watching these comedians on this the last Comic Standing, and man, it's a rough field. I mean,
yeah.
it really is. Right now, he has what happened with him is 28 years old. His son went into Aquarius, and then for the next, you see, and then it went with the moon, and for the next 30 years, then it's in Aquarius. And now it's at 14, the last 14 years, it's been in Pisces. And he's got right now, by progression, Sun, Jupiter in Pisces, with Mercury in Pisces. That's, you know, that Pisces is the person in the room that sees with a certain kind of compassion. It is the sign of Jesus, Pisces. It didn't matter, basically. If you read all the things that were written 100 years after he said them, so I don't know if they're, you know, but it still means that everything that came out of his mouth was, if I can do this, you can do this. I'm teaching you how to do this. All the electromagnetic healing that he did, we didn't learn it. I mean, it's 2,000 years later, but, you know, it was that whole render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. You know, my thing is that on the cross, he just said, forgive them. They just didn't get this. Maybe later.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, maybe we can come back and do this another time, okay? But, yeah, my question is, how did they hear him up there, you know? But it still is, the Piscean thing is, you know, being the victim or the hero, okay? You can choose either side when you're working with the Piscean energy. And for me, it sounds like he's chosen the hero side, if that is correct, you
yeah.
know? And, you know, I did a graphic ephemeris on him, and, you know, August September and right there at the beginning of October, major stuff, this whole plutonic energy and all, is going over top of his son.
Good
and
stuff.
It means he may be doing some really strong life work now that he set up for in a couple lifetimes. I have no way of knowing what that is, but it may come from an unusual place or from a very deep place, or, you know, Pluto can bring things back in your life. People that you haven't seen, like you're saying, these baseball players, excuse me, for a while. But he's got a big connection here in the beginning of October. And then he's got another thing where Saturn is in opposition to Saturn in November. And then he has Neptune, Jupiter in October and November. it's almost, when I'm looking, that's going over the sun, too. The plutonic energy is going over the God seed. So it means, you know, sometimes when, you know, what a seed is, it's like an introversion. Something stays underground. You know, a seed is underground for a long period of time. And the only way that you can make a seed grow is if you water it or if you care for it or in the sun. It doesn't have to sprout if it doesn't want to. You know, it's an introversion. So the seed, that, which means some people that I work with never really work their full chart. I mean, they never really work their full vortex energy because they become afraid. It doesn't mean they're not going to come back in another lifetime and do it or whatever, but it still means they only work one part of the chart. And when you talk to them, you see that. When you see a plutonic energy where Pluto, it takes hundreds of years for it to get back to Capricorn, and it's now, you can see what, you can really see what's happening in the government, and I mean, you can see what's happening in Haiti and Pakistan, and I mean, you can bet you in Pakistan they're not worried about war right now. I mean, when a catastrophe like this flood comes, it's totally, you know, a different kind of ball game.
Right.
And so what Pluto does in Capricorn is, Pluto is the seed that just turns everything over. It exposes things. It brings things up to the light. It's deep things that have never been looked at. You know, like there's, you know, rules and regulations or whatever in Washington that some of these senators are saying, well, I did that all the time. And now they're saying, you're going to be arrested for that. And you go, they go, well, you know, but he, you know, we've been doing that for ages. But what Pluto does is exposes it to the light. It brings it out. So, but Pluto in a chart on Capricorn means that plutonically, some seed that he really wants to do, that he really has wanted to do all his life, and if he's hearing me and when he hears this, do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Just why do you go do it? Okay?
August, September, October.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, August, yes, September, October. And Pluto's going to lay in there. I mean, it's going to lay in there for, you know, it's laying near it, and then it'll go back over. So this Pluto moves very slow, Joe. That's why I work with slow-moving the outer planets, because when they hit something like your sun, they really stay there for a while and expose something. So it's almost like... something that he, I don't know what that is, but here in the beginning of October, all kinds of lines go over each other on the graph. The nodes are connected here, the connection to people, Saturn is connected there, a key to something is there, Chiron is on it. So it's almost like all these things, like, come into place or fall into a line that something can happen.
Wow.
So, you know, it's for him to really go deep and write down all the things that he's wanted to do, you know, and has not done, and do them.
Mm-hmm.
Charts come together. I did a composite chart. You two come together, interestingly enough. Mercury, I put two charts together. I divide by two. It's called a composite chart. Interestingly enough, when I put you together with him, Mercury and the Sun in Aquarius are in the first house. So you light each other's vibration, girl.
Oh, good.
Yes. In other words, when you're in a relationship like that, one person goes like this, I have this idea, let's do this. And the other person goes, wow, that's good. Wow, that's a really neat idea. Well, I'll tell the jokes. Well, you do this. Well, let's do that. Well, you know, let's do it. That's what, you know, that's a vibration that stimulates another vibration. It's a beautiful thing in a composite chart, especially in the first house. Because instead of saying, oh, we'll wait to do it, you say, well, let's go do it. And then
God
you,
says, let's go do it.
Huh?
He says, let's go do it. And I say, well, now let's think about this.
Yeah, for a moment, and then I'll do it. But the moon comes together in Aries. So the moon comes together in the composite chart in Aries. So it means the atmosphere, no matter what is going on, it's always stimulated. It's always a fire kind of energy. It's always stimulated. And that's really good. Now, you know, you have the Sun in Aries, and you have the moon in Cancer. Now, your moon in Cancer is in that point of his gestation point across to the other side of his chart. So I would he has a Cancer gestation point that's very near your moon in Cancer. I would think that there's a deja vu thing of knowing each other in another lifetime here. You know, Cancer is, you know, it's like seeing that person across the room and you go, whoa, yeah, that's it. Whoa, yeah, you know?
I told my mom the morning I went on a blind date with him and got in the car with my mother the next morning, and I said, I just met the man I'm going to marry.
Well, I did too, but it turned out better for you. You had an ace, girl. There you go.
I did.
I had a dud. Okay. Sorry.
That is fascinating stuff.
Well, good. Tell him I was glad to do it. You know, I did, you know.
Oh, I just.
I really shrunk it down into, you know.
Yeah,
okay. Blue heron. What, dear?
Blue heron.
Now, what were you going to say? I cut you off there.
Blue heron.
Oh, you're saying blue heron?
Yeah.
Okay, blue heron. 9:30, well, in the morning of August the 13th, we have a Gemini midheaven, which means the connection is a learning environment, very eclectic energies coming together from all walks of life, Gemini midheaven. Gestation point in Taurus means basically these people are all coming together, but they have deep-seated planted things in the esoteric spiritual world. The Sun in Leo, of course, in the 11th house, is a lot is going to come out for humanity out of these people coming together at your retreat. Mercury in Virgo in the 12th house means lots of information mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. There will be learning on all of those different points. I also think that there's going to be, since your mother, Kitty Lovingshank, is a Libra, there are 5 planets in Libra in the first house. So Kitty will be present. Okay.
Let me just say, let me tell you, Joan, that the 13th of August is the anniversary of my mother's passing.
Yeah,
so that's
goodness.
Why. So that's why we bring her up.
Yes. She will be there. Well, she would be there whether we brought her up or not.
Yes.
She's been
yeah.
a part
well,
of
well, it's also her passing, but she passed on the harmonic conversion. So, I mean, she passed at a very high holy time. So, I mean, I'm sure she has a lot of cronies that are going to be present at this retreat. Saturn in Libra, first of all, Vesta is rising. Vesta is the eternal flame. It means like the flame at the Olympics that is lit. You know, it's the flame at Kennedy's grave. It's an eternal flame that lasts forever. And that is what's rising in this chart. So, and I find all these planets in Libra, Saturn in Libra, Venus in Libra, Mars in Libra, and the Moon in Libra, which is the environment. See, Libra for me is in the gloaming sign. Do you know what that means?
No.
That means at dusk. At dusk is the highest spiritual moment that there is. The monks, they gather on the beach, they play the horns, they do all of the at dusk. And that is Libra. That is the sign of Libra. So it means it's the highest spiritual time of the day. And when you see it in the first house, that's why I wanted the time this was starting, because by noon it moves to the 12th house, okay? So the first house is that it is, that is the kind of retreat. In other words, there's not going to there's going to be maybe some beginners here, but the fact is that these people are here and they've all done a lot of work and they're going to be learning a lot of dusk work, you know, work that they, does that make sense to you?
Yes.
It does. Well, now the startling thing about that is that directly across from that is Jupiter and Uranus retrograde at zero. Uranus is at 0 degrees of Aries again, retrograde, and Jupiter is at 2 degrees of Aries. So that is directly across, I mean, in direct opposition to Saturn, Venus, Mars, and the Moon. It's a direct opposition in the seventh house. So there may be some startling things that happen, some instant breakthrough, some things that really rock the balance, and that should make it a very exciting place to be. And then in the center of all that is Pluto in Capricorn, that I was talking about to Joan in relationship to Whitey, retrograde in the center of that. So that is the T-square. The T-square is in the first house, Saturn, Venus, Mars, and the Moon. And Moon, as I said, is the environment that is put around you, which is the blue heron retreat. Okay? The Sun is in Leo, which means that the most beautiful thing about this retreat is you've got all the energy of the Sun in Leo because it's its own sign. You know, it shines on everything. And then you have the Moon in Libra, which is in the gloaming, which is dusk. So dawn and dusk are really important for high ritual ceremonies at this. Then you have Pluto in Capricorn down here in the belly of the whale, down in the fourth house. And so in order to change something, you have to acknowledge it. So there's going to be a lot of people that are acknowledging things, and therefore they will be able to be in a safe place to let them go, let it go, whatever that may be. Mm-hmm. And Uranus and Jupiter, that's Uranus and Jupiter in Aries is like instant breakthrough. It's like an aha moment that you've been working on for ages, but all of a sudden it just all comes together. It's like when you're creating a show, I'll put it in a metaphor like this, you're creating a show or a dance and you have 15 different ideas and you're going, whoa, 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 and then all of a sudden you go, yes, and it all comes together. It's kind of a gestalt thing.
Yeah.
So that I'm looking at this as a creative pattern like that as a whole,
mm-hmm.
that people will be learning and bringing experiences that are very gestalt, okay?
And it will kind of take on a life of its own, right?
Yes. Well, Pluto is retrograde. Neptune is retrograde. Chiron is retrograde. Uranus is retrograde. Jupiter is retrograde. We have 4, 5, and 7, all of these planets. Pluto, Capricorn, retrograde. Neptune, Aquarius, retrograde. Chiron in Aquarius, retrograde. And Uranus and Jupiter in Aries, retrograde. That means so much subjective stuff going on. That is very, you know, what is going on in the surface is going on in the surface, but what is going on underneath is huge. It's a very subjective thing. So I'm looking at what?
It sounds volcanic.
Well, what else could you run, Kate? Okay. This is almost like the movie Inception in some ways, you know. The movie Inception is it's like layer after layer after layer after layer after layer. And, of course, it's a movie that I absolutely went bonkers over because in the dream state, you know, like Alice in Wonderland, it's like the White Queen saying, well, I'm crying, and they're going, why are you crying? She says, because I'm going to get hurt, but I'm crying beforehand so I get it over. I mean, that's like... You're always in the vortex in the dream state, but things are upside down and turning and but we think they're perfectly normal in the dream state.
Right.
And then we wake up and go, whoa. But the Inception movie is like that. I mean, the whole movie is like that. I was so fascinated in the fact that two rows in front of me was an 8-year-old boy, and his sisters were there and his older sister. And they were rickety, and they got up and went out, and they came back. This 8-year-old kid was like me. He sat up in his seat, and he never took his eyes off the screen. And when he turned around walking out, I went, hey, and he went, wow, wasn't that something?
Oh, I have to see that movie. Yeah.
So he got it. He really got it, and I got it. Well, Joanne went to the movies with me, and it's like, I don't know if you've seen Moulin Rouge.
No.
Well, Moulin Rouge is it's a really interesting movie. Well, you have seen The Matrix, right?
Yes.
No.
I was going to
do movies.
Okay, you don't do movies, but that's okay. It's like Alice in Wonderland. It's also an updated Clockwork Orange, which is was a real innovative cult kind of movie. But it's a movie that Christopher Nolan wanted to make 14 years ago, and then they wouldn't let him make it, so he made Memento, which is a movie that goes backwards. And then he made Prestige, which was a movie about Tesla. And then he made The Dark Knight, which is Heath Ledger's last movie. And Heath Ledger played the Joker in it. And I'm sure Heath Ledger was up for this movie to be the star.
Uh-huh.
But he never had the money to make the movie. And then after he made Dark Knight, they gave him permission to do the movie. And so he does not use a lot of green screen, which is he uses some. But what he did was really, which is unheard of now, is really built the sets. And when you see the second level of the dream level, the actors are really in this tube that's churning. You know, like you did in those olden days when you went through that thing at the carnival?
Yeah.
Where the tube turned and you were in there trying to walk through? These actors really had to do that. And I just found that totally fascinating. But in Moulin Rouge, Joanne started to snore after the last 5 minutes. And in Inception, she looked at me and said, I guess this is going to be a long haul, and went immediately to sleep. And, you know, but it didn't matter where you woke up in this movie. It was so confusing. Who cares?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
She woke up out of a dream into the dream state. So it was like, whoa. But, you
yeah.
know, it's a psychological movie that, you know, what we talk about, our deepest secrets. It's about getting to the level where the deepest secret is, where we hide it at the deepest place. And you know me, I just go bananas over that. I mean, not everybody knows me, but I really love that level kind of movie, you know, that you go levels. And so the gamers, the kids that are really working on these computers, that they go, you know, they get level after level after level, they're really trained in this kind of movie, you know, to see where he's going. And I didn't know that Christopher Nolan was married to Emma Thompson. You know, Emma Thompson. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a pretty creative household, right? I mean, I'm like.
Yeah.
So today I did his chart, and we pulled it up, and I was going on and on about this movie with clients, and this woman today, she saw it, but her husband didn't, but they're going, you know, I had them today. And he was born on my birthday.
Oh, wow.
So I did. I went, I'll just brag a little. I went, oh, wow.
So the Blue Heron Farm Spiritual Retreat Center is a place where people can come and share their deepest secrets.
Yes, and even if they're not speaking them out loud, they're coming up.
And it is all kept right here.
Well, you have Saturn in Libra in your natal chart. So
yeah.
that Saturn rules the Capricorn moon, but you have Saturn and Libra rising and 1, 2, 3, 4 planets, right? And
uh-huh.
You're having, you know, this is a Saturn return.
Cool.
Well, I think it's pretty cool. And
yeah,
so
you
are the responsible person. So it's a gate. When you're having a Saturn return, it's a gate, just like I told Joan about Whitey, you know, coming into this lifetime with a Capricorn sun and Mercury and Sagittarius retrograde and all of that. This is like a gate thing. So you should think of it as a gate thing of somehow all of the work that you have done, and we know SCADs, okay?
Yeah.
And this is like stepping into a new over a new threshold.
Sure.
And I
yeah.
think that is extremely exciting. And the other thing about it is that the gestation point of the Blue Heron Retreat, where is it? That's not it. The gestation point at 9:30 is in Taurus, okay? And your progressed son, Kate, is in Taurus.
And Tom, how about how does it fall on his chart?
Yeah, well, I knew you were going to ask me that. God love Tom. I'll call you and tell you because I don't have his chart right in front of me.
You know what, though? I have his chart that is a little different than the one you have.
That's okay.
In the sense that I think we have a different time and everything, and he actually has his rising sign is also Virgo, and his moon is also in Capricorn. But I have to give you the other details on that later.
It just means it's running a different system, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
That's true, yeah.
There's a Koch system, and then there's the, you know, there's the Placidus system, and then there's the Equal House system, and you know, there's a little bit of difference in the systems. I mean, astrologers can sit in New York, and I was in a, you know, workshop where they fought over it for hours, and I said, why bother? I got up and left. I mean, come on, you know, it's, you know, I think that that's great if his moon is in Capricorn and the rising is Virgo. What is in Libra in that chart, in that chart you have there?
Oh, I don't have it here. It's like across the room. And like I said, we'll get
it's
to that
across
later.
The room. Sorry. I can't sing. Okay. By 12.
I'm excited by the whole idea of, well, the whole idea of it. And,
well,
And that, you know, we're changing lives, and there's no administrative, there's nothing to...
So I do have Tom Harner's chart in front of me now, because I do have an associate that heard that and went right and got it. It's now
wonderful. Oh, isn't she?
Wonderful.
Don't you just love her? it just feels so much...
The chart. Yeah. His midheaven in this chart, and Mars in Taurus and the Sun in Taurus, are on the whole gestation point of the Blue Heron retreat. In fact, his sun, natal sun, which won't change in any chart, is exactly almost on top of the gestation point. So he's the birther of this. He is.
It was his idea. It's the thing. It's not really his idea, but I mean, it's the thing that he needs to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like the energy, the physical energy behind
mm-hmm.
all of this. I mean, I could never have done alone. And he couldn't have really done it without me, but he's so strong and you know, we're digging ditches and filling stuff in with cement and
mm-hmm.
Mixing cement and lugging it around. But he's very, if it weren't for him, we couldn't have done it.
Yeah.
There's so much divine guidance in this whole thing, Kate, and I will write to you privately, too, but I know it's right. It's just
mm-hmm.
everything in me says it's
and
right.
And that's a lot, Joan.
It is.
Well, I know it is.
But you said new beginning. Yes, it's a new beginning and a new adventure for the two of them. But
mm-hmm.
it's a new adventure for everybody that's coming, too. And the whole thing, it just kind of is going to snowball. I just have no doubts about it at all.
And the
None.
Taurus, the Taurus in it is the environment, the beautiful environment.
Mm-hmm.
The blue is called Blue Heron, and the beautiful environment and all of the environment is also an equal partner as the people that are coming.
Right.
Oh, yes, that's so true.
Right.
And we saw
the river.
Yeah, we saw a bald eagle flying down the river the other day. Wow, what a phenomenal sight.
Mm.
I saw one time in California, but it was brief. This thing was huge, huge wingspan.
Mm.
It owned the entire river, and it was beautiful. And that was a sign.
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, that was a sign.
Yes.
And, very, very exciting, and both of you have done an enormous amount of work in your life, both you and Tom. Well, you know, I think you're both saints, so that's okay. Don't tell anybody, though.
Well, I'm
I just told everybody on the radio, okay? So that's okay. I called
All
Joan
right.
an angel and you a saint. Okay, there we go.
And the two of us have gotten together, haven't we?
Yes. That's interesting.
You know what, Heron? The keynote thing about the Heron is aggressive self-determination and self-reliance. Do you know that?
Yes.
The great
the
blue heron is flight is powerful, and its legs and head are held in a straight line. It
mm-hmm.
uses a slow stalking stride when hunting. It reflects an aggressive movement toward opportunities that present themselves. So
and the door's open.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it, you know, you, if you look at it, that this will enable people to follow their own path. That's what I was talking about, trails
yeah.
and paths and gates.
Right.
Oh, I can't believe that, because just now Tom made a whole bunch of trails. He didn't want to mow. He didn't want to mow the entire top, what we call the top 30 and top 40, because the deer are living up there in their little
yeah.
little spots. So he just made these trails so that we can walk through that area. And funny that you should even mention that. That's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and you know, when I was out, when I was processing in the environment, it's wonderful for everybody to find their own tree. And they may take a long time and make friends with that tree and have that tree talk to you and sit beside it and give it stuff and let it give you stuff back and draw a picture of it and write a poem to the tree. It's unbelievable. But they can do that with any environmental thing. They can do it with the river. They can do it with a tree. They can do it with, you know, any kind of aspect of the environment that they pick out. These people are really, in, as they come in there in August the 13th, it's a very high holy moment for them, coming in the gate into your environment. And, I mean, going back the trail to get into your place, that is a gate and a trail in itself. It's going deep within yourself. As you go down that path, you're going deep within yourself.
Well, I must say, you know, we've lived here for 20 years, and we've always been amazed by this environment.
Yes.
And I'm so happy that finally we get to share. We get to share it with people. And we will, instead of announcing to the world that we're opening a retreat, like this official retreat where the authorities come to look at it, we just have it like the guests. Our guests are coming. You know, our house guests are coming for the weekend, and you know, and they have come to our home, and is their home as well, and you know, the whole thing is not some official bullshit thing. It's absolutely on a level playing field where everybody is coming home to us.
And the great blue heron is considered the king of the marsh, and the sun is in Leo, which is the king of the heavens. See,
wow.
Yes.
Wow.
And the great blue heron is just like the giraffe. It sees up above everything else.
Oh.
Yes.
True. And there's a lot of night herons, too.
I didn't hear that, honey. Somebody tried to call in. What?
There's a lot of night herons on the river. And I don't know. I think that it's almost like another world coming up from deep.
Yes.
Subconscious mind that if you're hanging out at the river, I went into the river last night, and I can't say that I've ever done this before, but I could hear a blue heron close by. It was so,
oh, wow.
So cool.
Well, Kate, we will be sending you all our love and all our energy and everything we're going to put around your spot to change the world, because, of course, it can, right?
Yes.
And you tell Whitey that I was glad to do such a wonderful spiritual chart for such a neat guy, okay?
Thank you so much. What a fun thing. I can't wait to listen again and sit down with some dates. That's going to be fun. Thank
you. Okay.
I want to hear Whitey's reaction.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting, isn't
yeah.
it?
And I want to know what happens to him in the beginning of October.
Oh,
yeah.
You know you will.
Yeah. I mean, I want to hear how this transformation is. He probably already knows what it is.
I don't know. I just can't imagine. The first thing I want to ask him is, what is it that you want to do that you haven't done?
Yeah, that's true.
He has really done a lot of fun things. So, very interesting.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks a million.
Well, thank you.
Appreciate
hey, love
light
now. Bye.
Love you.
Love you.
And we're going to play Music for Mother and Child by Klaus D. Jensen in Denmark. And you can buy his music on www.praytoheal.com.